WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Yeah, I'm sporting my Window Nation gear around here, getting ready for my birthday. It's a Friday. We're going to be doing a birthday cake, but a traditional around here, it's a birthday crab cake. It's Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be playing down at the Fadley's in Lexington Market. No better place to spend my birthday morning, Friday morning from 9 until noon. I'm getting all sorts of people coming by. I don't think they think it's like a party. I'm like, it's just a crab cake tour. When you get to be this old, you don't really, I prefer like the cakes from Herman's back when I was 12 years old and having friends like Luke over with little party hats and stuff like that. But instead, it's going to be lottery tickets for anybody that stops by, says hello on my birthday. It's a Raven Scratch Offs, as well as our friends at Goodwill, making sure you know about Halloween and my David Bowie thing that I'm going to be doing in a couple of weeks, as well as our friends at Window Nation. Buy two, get two free. Somebody called me this week and they're like, does that mean like if I buy two, I get two free? I'm like, yeah. It was Mike Rosenfeld. I'm like, yeah, yeah. It's 866-90-NATION. You can find them. You can find Luke and Owings Mills. I'm not in Owings Mills anymore. You can read about that at BaltimorePositive.com. He will be at the Meadowlands on Sunday. I will not be at the Meadowlands on Sunday. But we will be opining around here on all things Ravens. And as I wrote in my columnist, and you see what I did there, Luke, what you've been doing for a dozen years, and my column Ness out at BaltimorePositive.com, I wrote about the new rivalry with the Cincinnati Bengals. And more than that, that the ship got righted. It's amazing what 60 Minutes of Football every Sunday does to either deodorize or, you know, basically, you know, you get the Matt Rule thing going on, or you're the Raiders and you wake up 1-4 after you had a 17-point lead on the road against your rival and all that stuff. So there's bad news and good news. It's a good news week around here, right? We got baseball, we got football, things are happening around here. How you doing?
Good, good. I mean, you just said it. A primetime home game victory goes a long way for easing tensions, right? Goes a long way from taking that hyperventilating that was happening at the end of the Miami game, the end of the Buffalo game, and even after Joe Burrow sneaks into the end zone from the 1 yard line, get a win, everyone exhales. And you say, all right, first place, AFC North's not great. You look at the rest of the AFC beyond Buffalo and Kansas City, no one's looking like these juggernauts, and they took Buffalo right down to the final seconds. So you're okay. There's things to work on, no question about it, but you're fine. And you're now going into a week where you're playing a Giants team that's better than expected, but still a team you should beat, even going on the road. So you're fine, and you have a chance to improve to 4-2 and maintain first place in the division. You're feeling a lot better about things. not as though a loss would have sent them into a full-blown crisis like Carolina, for example, in firing Matt Rule, but you're doubting everything. We were doubting everything last week. So you put together a good performance, you get a division win, and you're feeling much better about yourselves as you go into, hard to believe now, we're entering week 6. It feels like training camp just started. And once you get into regular season mode, you kind of look up and the weeks start flying by. That's for sure.
All right, look, dude, I see the silver in your beard. You see my American flag. I'm wearing this for Window Nation, but for bunting, because it is a season of bunting, you know, where, and I don't mean like bunting to move runners over, although that's one kind of bunting. But it's the postseason, right? Your birthday was last week. Happy birthday. I saw you celebrating with the family. My birthday's this week. And when I think of my birthday, it's every October 14th. And every October 14th, there's a baseball game or three or five these days on. Used to be one or two. Sometimes it'd be an off day. Sometimes it'd be my Sadie Hawkins dance at Dundalk High School. And I'd have to decide whether I was going to go to Veterans Stadium for game 3 of the 1983 World Series or go to the Sadie Hawkins dance. And as you probably know by now, I went to the Sadie Hawkins dance. I missed the Benny Ayala hit, all of that. But I was there on Saturday and Sunday. But I think of October's past. In my past life, before the Orioles threw me out, before you came into my life, I went to the World Series every year. I went to every game every year. So all these Cleveland memories that come back, and being in Toronto when Joe Carter hit the home run, I had a life in baseball for 20, 25 years. And when this time of the year comes, and the Padres are shocking the world and beating up on the unsold out Mets, I get my Tony Gwynn jersey out and I'll have a little fun and pretend I'm a Manny Machado fan. Although I will say this, and I wanted to say this publicly to you, because we're going to have a baseball conversation. If you forget football for a little while, Luke and I are just going to get some baseball going, and we'll get some Orioles in here as well. I only have one interaction in my life with Manny Machado. Do you know when this happened?
I want to say it was probably the All-Star game in D.C., right?
It was the All-Star game in D.C.
Okay.
He was set up, and he was a big story, right? Because he was about to get dealt, right? Orioles were no bueno. He was like, and I don't know that anybody ever asked him, did the Orioles ever offer you anything? Did they ever offer you a contract? And I didn't go with any sort of malice or thinking. I even told told somebody this in one of our conversations, maybe Bill Cole, that when I didn't have the heart to ask Buck a tough question that day at the ALCS in Kansas City. I was in the room when Buck was doing the, we just lost. We just got our ass kicked by the Royals. Their bullpen, they're celebrating out here. They're going to the World Series. We saw the party, and inside of the whoop whoop 10, 20 feet away, there's Buck. I didn't have the heart to ask a question. So I'm not like, when I get a pass, I have to go ask the tough question. They both have sort of put me in that position though, that I have to go and track down John Angelos to get his famous quote about the Rockets' red glare and the Orioles standing. And then his brother says he's trying to move the team to Nashville. So I would just say this with Machado, I had one interaction in my life with him, and it was interesting, right? Because I'm up on him. He's there. He's taking questions. He's happy to talk about things. He was not hiding. You know what I mean? I have no experience with him hiding behind the locker and not wanting to talk. And I went up to him, and he knew who I was, strangely. Like, in the way he interacted with me, like a what are you doing here, like kind of way. And I only asked him, and I asked him, and he looked at me, and I got video of it, I think. He said to me, no, they never offered me anything. They never, and I'm thinking to myself, now we have the Lamar thing, right? So over the course of history where you keep players and different things happen, we watch our franchise player. And that's what Manny Machado probably could have, should have, would have been our Lamar. That if this thing gets effed up somehow, and I talk about that all the time with Dennis and other people on contracts, this is the time of year we get to watch what happens when you get to the next level and the heartbreak of going so far to get three games in your own building and getting your ass kicked. Like Toronto, right? Or St. Louis, right? Or where the Phillies are. And my dear, dear friend, Micah Buckdahl up in Philadelphia, his little boy loves the Phillies. So he's going to his first playoff game. And I know you got a Phillies Jones in your thing too. And, I love baseball, man. And I love this time of year. And I'm really looking forward to the point where the Orioles can break your heart or make your heart, or there's a Delman Young double, or there's a Tito Landrum home run for like your niece, let's say.
No question about it. I mean, I was even having that conversation with my brother-in-law over the weekend, having watched the Phillies on Friday and Saturday at their place, saying that, yeah, it's going to be really fun in the next few years if the Phillies and the Orioles, who are certainly trending upward, and we can get into that. We know what kind of season they have. We know what kind of talent they have, even if there are still obstacles to overcome to get to that next level. But saying it's going to be fun if she's getting old enough to be aware of baseball and what's going on and all of that, that both our teams could be in the mix in October. But it's a great time of year. I wanted to say it to you. I know we talked about it off air the other day. Really enjoyed the wild card series more than I thought I would. I think back to a decade ago when they added the second wild card, they did the wild card game, and it wasn't something that I liked on paper. This idea that you'd play 162 games and you'd qualify for a postseason spot, yet you're playing a one game elimination where that just kind of goes completely against what baseball is all about when you play 162, right? We know that each game in isolation is a coin flip, to maybe 10% one way or the other, right? I mean, depending on the pitching matchup, we know that every bad team's going to win 60. We know that every great team's going to lose 60, roughly speaking. So we know what kind of variance is involved. So I originally was against the wild card game format, but then we saw the Orioles go to Texas and what kind of great theater that was for that Buck Showalter 2012 team. And I really was digging
the
wild
card. Did you just say Buck Showalter? The guy that sent the cops out to the mound on the greasy ear? that was going on in the middle of the Ravens game, dude.
It was. It was. And it was a shame. I mean, that was the one game of that entire weekend I didn't get to watch because I was in the press box covering the Ravens. But these best of threes, which I didn't know how I was going to feel about it because it wasn't, didn't have the drama of the wild card game over the last decade that I actually came to enjoy, but it was still a really short series. But I tell you, I really enjoyed it. And I think one of the factors that really made it enjoyable, and we'll see how it plays out in the coming days with the division series and then getting into the LCS, but we saw starting pitchers going, being treated a little more regularly, with a couple exceptions, but for the most part, I mean, take a look at Philly, as we were mentioning them, Wheeler and Aaron Nola.
Why do you give these guys $40 million if you're not expecting seven innings out of them in October? I mean, like,
Well, I mean, and that's one thing you could throw out about the Blue Jays on Saturday with Gausman. I mean, you know, they go to the pen and look what happened. So,
well, look what happened to Scherzer.
Right. Well, I mean, he just got rocked. Yeah. I mean, that was just a case of he got rocked. He got shelled. I mean, you're not expecting that because he's Max Scherzer. But we also know that's the beauty of baseball where, you know, even the best pitchers are going to wake up on the wrong side of the bed a few times a year. And if one of those times is October, boy, I mean, that puts you in a bad spot in a best of three. So I really enjoyed it. You know, we got a couple upsets, of course. I mean, with Philadelphia taking down St. Louis, and you say goodbye to Albert Pujols and Yadi Molina. But, you know, that was a really entertaining series. And, you know, you got to love what Seattle's done. I mean, Seattle was in a position similar to the Orioles earlier in the season where they're below 500 and things are looking bad and they're not living. You know, they had some expectations, but they weren't living up to expectations. And then they just went on a second half run to win 90 games. So, you know, Cleveland, you know, they're going to be the big underdog story going up against the mighty Yankees, right? And then you have the Padres, as you mentioned, they knock off a 100-plus win team in the Mets, and now they're going up against their big brother in the NL West who dominated them this season. We'll see what they have to offer. And I think the most fascinating factor from a competitive standpoint, Nestor, is now with these first-round buys, which you talk about that in the NFL, you're like, ah, great, extra rest. You know, you got bumps and bruises. Yeah, that applies to
them. Somebody's going to be sleepwalking here and find themselves in an 0-2 hole quick or something, right?
Right. It is just so against the nature of a baseball player to have, what, 6 days off, 5 full days off. I mean, you don't have anything like that. All-star break, fine, but everyone's off for 4 days during the all-star break. But, I mean, you had these top two seeds in each league playing intra-squad games over the last week. It's like the first 2 weeks of spring training. So I'm really fascinated to see what that looks like. And not to overreact to what happens in 1 year, but over the next few years, do we see some higher seeds bounced a little at a higher frequency than when it happens? Which, hey, it happens anyway.
Maybe the week off to punish you?
Yeah, I mean, it happens anyway. We see that, you know, we know in baseball with just the nature of it, the high variance of it, that the best team quite often does not win. So, and we saw the Orioles deal with this against the Royals in 2014. The Orioles were a much better team during the season, but the Royals were better in October. So
there's something about watching underdogs over the course of a week for baseball that is different than on a Sunday when somebody can beat, you know, Alabama, let's say, right? Like when one of those Chaminade, whatever that Coppin State, whatever your miracle game on the court would be. It's different in baseball when pitching matchups sort of having to get to three or four wins, whatever the series is, whether it's five this week, seven next week, which is, you know, the whole format's weird because to me, it's all built around the weather. You know what I mean? Like not, I mean, if this were cricket, they'd play these games into January. And believe me, if they could make more money on it and figure out how to sell it all out and do all that, they would. But there is something about like when I put my Tony Gwynn, you get a Padres jersey on, you're just an underdog. No matter what, they never won, right? They've had 50 there. Like if it says Cleveland on it, despite LeBron and all that, and you're playing New York, you know, your inclination is, and I guess this is why I bring the Machado thing up, but I found him to be a relatively despicable player. Like, you know, just, I didn't find him to be my kind of guy, or I would have wanted the 13 jersey. I'm Hispanic. I thought he was a bit aloof and above it all and didn't really want to be here in the end. And we're going to find out with Lamar whether he really wants to be here or not. So I'll continue to portray it in that way because it's important. I mean, it is part of the vernacular in the conversation about how, you know, Don Baylor and Bobby Gritch and Doug DeSensei's went elsewhere, and Mike Flanagan and Tippi Martinez and Rick Dempsey stayed, right? So I, over the course of all of this, how it relates to cities and us watching Machado as a villain or as a, the one time I dealt with him, he was sort of like Gene Wilder and Willie. He was like, I'll tell you anything you want to know. He kind of like got up on me and he's like, what questions would you have? He knew who I was and thought like I was doing the expose on asking, you know, he's like, ask me whatever you want, man. You know, I'm here. You got access to me kind of thing. And by the way, my wife brought me my Tony Gwynn jersey. So and by the way, I love this thing. I bought it on the 30-30 tour. And I don't just love it because it's so awesome. I love it because it feels nice. Like I can actually wear it on a 92 degree day at Dodger Stadium and have stuff thrown at me. I haven't done that yet, but I have worn it at, I wore it at the All-Star game in DC a couple years ago, but I've only had it 7 years. I probably put it on my body 20 times. I probably should wear it more often, but I love it. So here's where I am, right? Like my buddy is the assistant general manager of the Padres. Freddie Yeoman and I have been thick for all of our lives for 30 years since I met him when I was a kid and I had long hair and Brad Pennington was bitchy. And so there, I had Padre blood. I hear my Aunt Jane call them the Padres. She had like a, she was from Scranton, Pennsylvania. So she spoke like an Eastern Pennsylvania person, which I'm sure you're very, very familiar with up there. And she lived out in Southern California and I loved her to death and she loved the Padres and I took her to games and we went to the Murph and I got to know Tony Gwynn. So like, there's a part of me that like, I'm just going to root for the Padres, but I do, when Machado comes up and starts, all I think of him is jaking it, leaving. And I think about how awfully mismanaged the Angelos family was with all of this, but I can't figure out who the good guys in there. I mean, I know I'm not going to want the Yankees to win. And I have a Dodger hat and I love Janet Marie and all that. And I'm not anti Dodger or, but I'm trying to like find a team. So I'm going to go with this. And it's, is that popular? I mean, where is the Machado thing? Do your people hate him or love him? Would they root for or against the Padres? Is he a, like people hated Messina when he left? I sort of understood where he was coming from. Sort of understand where Machado's coming from, but we were doing a lot of winning around here when he was here. Like he could have stayed here. This could have worked out, right? This could, I mean, not to say that it couldn't have been us and we are where we are, but I'm trying to figure out for him or against him with the Padres.
I think most Orioles fans are fine with Manny. I think they are. I mean, to you, you just made the comparison to Messina. I mean, that was, if Machado had gone to the Yankees or Machado had gone to the Red Sox, maybe that's a different story, but you know, he's traded to the Dodgers, other league, other side of the country, and then he signs at the Padres.
Just to watch him play.
I mean, it lends itself to what you just said. I mean, he's with the Padres. I mean, you're talking about one of the, you know, they epitomize underdogs as it pertains to Major League Baseball for their entire existence, save for a couple years, right? I mean, you know, okay, there was 1998, but they had Tony Gwynn and they were going up against the Yankees. So even then, they were a major underdog. So I think most Orioles fans are completely fine with Manny Machado and want to see him do well and love the idea of maybe at some point the Orioles are playing the Padres in a World
Series. Now, wouldn't that be something? That'd be a road trip worth doing, right?
Right, right.
But they look good. I mean, come on, dude. This is, and they're wearing those UPS jerseys right now, right? That those baggy gray, they look like they should be delivering like an air conditioner or something.
their look is better now than it had been for a long time. Because they've leaned back into wearing some of the brown and all of that, which, you know, I mean, there aren't many teams that do that in pro sports. So it's definitely a unique look. But yeah, I think most Orioles fans are, I don't think they're rooting for the Padres to win at all necessarily. I think certainly Astros history aside, Trey Mancini is there and he's absolutely beloved. So I think it's quite easy to at least root for Trey, even if you're begrudgingly not thrilled about the fact that he's with the Astros. They're still not the Yankees, right? So you know, I think it's easier on the AL side of it to, you know, root for Cleveland against the Yankees, obviously. And then I think Seattle is just a fun story, but everyone wants to see Trey do well. But you know, you look at San Diego. I mean, my goodness, they finished what, 21 games behind the Dodgers. I mean, that was a boat race of a division race and they really got beat up soundly in the regular season. But you look at what they did going to New York and beating the Mets. And I mean, that was impressive. And they were the underdog there. And now you have a chance after the Dodgers have sat for 5 days to go out there and win a couple games early on and give yourself a chance. So, you know, I think that it's fun in that regard. And I think plenty of Orioles fans are rooting for Manny Machado to do well. And I don't think there's
him leaving and us sucking is what got Rutschman here to begin with.
Right, right. And that's the other thing you have to think about. Now, it would have been nice to have gotten something a little more impactful than Dean Kramer. And that's really all they've gotten because Yusnail Diaz flopped. And at this point, I'm wondering if he's even going to be on the 40-man roster come spring. But, you know, that aside,
I had an Oriole insider, by the way, the minute that deal was made, said that kid's not, no bueno, not going to make it.
Yeah, yeah. There was some early sentiments that, you know, maybe not what he was billed to be at the time of the acquisition, which, let's face it, would not be the first time. I mean, at one point, the Orioles traded Eddie Murray for Juan Bell. You know, let's just
you and I could sit here over a tall glass of, you know, the drink of your choice, and I could say Jim Fuller, and you could say Drungo Hazewood, and I could say Bob Baylor, and you could say, you know, you could say Ken Gerhart. You know, we could just literally go through the pantheon of Craig Worthingtons and near misses and the Mike Youngs who worked out for a little while and the Larry Sheetses who, nice man, lives locally, worked out for a little bit, but not everybody turned out to be Eddie Murray, right?
They're called prospects for a reason, right? And more often than you'd like, prospects become suspect and then they become busts. So, I mean, that's just.
Well, then you see Adley Rutschman in a city where Lamar Jackson's going on. And who knows? You know, maybe Gunnar Henderson winds up being better. Maybe Grayson Rodriguez and DL. I mean, who knows who the legends are going to be when all this is over with, right? Like, that's part of what makes this. I mean, the other night, Hayden Hurst is running around in Mark Andrews, right? Like, hey, everybody in the league passed on Mark Andrews 3 times, right?
No question about it. And I mean, that's what makes this fun. And that's what makes it fun right now if you're an Orioles fan to watch this and kind of say, okay, what's it going to take for them to take the next step next year? What's it going to take in, let's say, 2 years for them to be not just in the playoffs, but you're looking at them in terms of, hey, this team can win a World Series. So, you know, it certainly so much of it's going to really hinge on what they do internally, you know, what kind of player Adley Rutschman continues to become, what kind of player Grayson Rodriguez is, what kind of player Gunnar Henderson is. Go down the list of other guys we're going to see over the next 12 to 18 months, let's say. But as we've talked about, as I wrote at the end of the season at BaltimorePositive.com, so much of it's going to come down to what they do this offseason, what they do next offseason to augment. They have a heck of a young nucleus here to be excited about. I think Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson both have legitimate MVP kind
Eddie
of potential.
And Cal. Eddie and Cal,
at some
kind
point.
Of, that's where you are, right?
Possibly. And let's be clear. This is talking about Eddie and Cal at that point in their career, not saying that they're going to become Hall of Fame players.
But they're on a track to be very, very good 8 to 12
unique.
Years. The next 8 years out of them, that if you're thinking, if we know what we're doing, we get some pitching, we sign the right players, these are two cats that are big league ball players. Maybe one day they'll only hit 276 and hit 18 home runs like Matt Wieters or, you know, or whatever. Right. But these are big. These are the real thing. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
They're not only big league players. They're different than the collection of guys that we've seen come through here who have had some success. And I'm talking about Cedric Mullins, Ryan Mountcastle, go down the list of guys that have taken a lot of bullets the last 3-4 years, but they played a part in getting the Orioles to this point. But anyone who watched the Orioles closely, certainly with Adley from his arrival in late May and Gunnar Henderson arriving for the last month of the season, they're different. And I mean that they're different in a way that you can see that these are dudes. You know, that's what they say. You know, they're guys, they're dudes. So they have great potential. I mean, Adley Rutschman already.
Well, you know what that felt like on your little league team.
No doubt.
It wasn't me. Ray Toskis and Mark Karolkowski and Johnny Rollo, I knew we had a pretty good team. I didn't mind batting sixth or seventh on those teams.
Right. I didn't mind being the leadoff hitter getting on for the big boppers in my little league lineup. But it really is a case of, I mean, Adley Rutschman already had one of the all-time great seasons, rookie seasons for a catcher. I said it to you a few weeks ago, and I stand by it. He's already better than Matt Wieters was at his best. And Matt Wieters was still an all-star player, even if he didn't live up to being, you know, Joe Mauer with power, you know, Johnny Bench, you know, all the ridiculous hype that there was for him. I feel like Adley Rutschman is already exceeding what Matt Wieters was. And again, that's not a knock on Wieters as much as it's a compliment to Rutschman. And I think Gunnar Henderson, who, I mean, keep in mind, this is a kid who started the year at Double A. This was a kid who was drafted the year before the pandemic out of high school and did not have that first full season of pro ball that a 19-year-old normally has. And he was able to still develop. And Mike Elias kind of said that, you know, labeled him kind of the flagship guy for their player development. I mean, this was a kid who was not considered overly polished when he came out of high school, but was considered very talented with his raw tools. And they've been able to develop him at a very high rate. So, you know, these are exciting players. I mean, you're talking about a catcher and you're talking about a shortstop or third baseman. You know, he can certainly play shortstop. I don't know if he'll play shortstop, though. He might be a third baseman long term. He can do both, though, and certainly hits for power and is a great athlete, can steal some bases. So you have two guys on the positional side that you can anchor this lineup around for at least the next 6 years. Now, we'll see how it plays out and contracts and extensions and arbitration and all those different things. But you have a really good base there.
Well, that's why we think we're going to be playing in October. Right?
Sure. Literally. No question. So, but the big question is, and I'll use the Phillies as an example of this because I watched them a lot this season, and they overcame a poor start to the year, fired their manager, all that. But you look at them going up against the Cardinals; they were an underdog. They'll be an underdog going up against the Braves, but they have Wheeler and they have Aaron Nola. So that's my big question for the Orioles: these teams that tend to make these runs in the postseason, they have a stud 1-2 at the top of their rotation. And that's not to say they have to be the absolute best, like Cy Young winners, but they have to be all-star caliber, legit.
It's always top been of the that rotation. Way. It used guys. To be that way. You needed three or four, right?
Well, I mean,
used to be only two or three teams get to the postseason too. So now sure. You feel like we have more of a chance to get there. And if we do, we can be the Phillies. We can be the Padres, whatever. We can be 23 games behind the Yankees and still be playing this weekend.
No question. I mean, it lends itself that you don't have to win 100 games. But if you want to get in and actually do something of merit, if you want to do something of substance, you do look at the pitching. And that's where I look at this thing right now and say, okay, if Grayson Rodriguez can be one of those guys, and again, I don't know that, but he's got the potential on paper. Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus and MLB Pipeline, they all seem to think he has that potential. So that's people other than the Orioles saying that. So that's one. Where's the other one going to come from? I don't think it's going to be DL Hall. I think DL Hall is either going to be number three, number four starting pitcher, or what I'm thinking more and more, which I don't know if Orioles fans are going to love this, but I think he might still profile best as a late inning reliever, which, hey, if he can, you can pair him with Felix Bautista at the back end of the bullpen. That's important too. But my question is, where is that either number one or number two starting pitcher coming from to pair with Grayson Rodriguez over the next couple of years? And I think quite possibly if this thing is done correctly, that individual is not in the organization right now, but either via free agency or more likely, I would say, via trade. I think over the next year to, you know, if not this year, certainly the year after that, you want to acquire that guy, because if you have that kind of 1-2 punch, certainly in a 3-game series, we saw that over the weekend. But you know, now getting into the division series, you know, it's still a 5-game series. If you can have those guys pitch at least three of those games, boy, you've got a heck of a chance right there. So it's not the only thing, but it's a big part of it. And that's where my next question for the Orioles is, okay, you've got positional talent, but I'm not saying they shouldn't add another bat, by the way, but certainly they have more established at the major league level in terms of positional young talent. But the pitching is the next question. Bullpen looks good, right? You know, continue to do what they've done out there, which has been terrific with some of the guys that they've been able to either fix or develop in that regard. But starting rotation, you know, that's the next question. And yeah, I don't want to let me be clear. I don't want to dismiss someone like John Means, but when's he coming back? June? You know, I mean that's going to be tough to just expect him to come right back and to slot him into one of the top two spots in your rotation.
He's the Ronnie Stanley of the Orioles. We can't count on him.
I mean, I wouldn't even say that. It's just a matter of you can't count on him for, you know, to be your ace. I mean, maybe by season's end in 2000, maybe a year from now, we are talking about John Means being their ace, but a lot has to happen between now and then. And I certainly would not put all my eggs in that basket. So can you go out and acquire at least a top half of the rotation legitimate starter? If the Orioles can do that this offseason, I'm feeling even better about their prospects in 2023 and beyond.
Well, they went the other direction, right? They let Gonzalez go. They let Wei-Yin Chang go during that period of time and never brought in a Scherzer. They brought in a Jimenez, right? I mean, like, no, yeah. These are the decisions, right? And when you go back to the Duquette decisions when it comes to Nelson Cruz or when it comes to, or even before that, right? I mean, going back one generation before, but Nelson Cruz, JJ Hardy, you know, players that played a key role that are, we're going to watch them play for another team here the next week or two, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, it's not as many as it used to be because, I mean, some guys, I mean, Nelson Cruz getting ready to hang it up. It appears after, wow, you think back to the Orioles didn't want to give him a fourth year. And boy, they could have given him a 7-year contract. And by the way, there were other people in the industry that agreed with them at the time. But boy, he exceeded expectations in that regard. I mean, talking about a guy who played and was very productive to age 40 and beyond. I mean, that just doesn't happen very often. You know, that's what made the Pujols thing so incredible over the last few months in St. Louis. So, but there's a lot of excitement, a lot of questions. Certainly with ownership, as you and I have talked about, we'll continue to talk about that still hanging over what is otherwise a pretty optimistic set of circumstances from a baseball standpoint right now. But what's
as payroll
optimistic gonna be like?
As they've been in like forever.
Years. I mean, even you really have to go back. You have to go back decades for the state of the farm system right now. It hasn't been this good since going back to the glory days. I mean,
hey,
it really hasn't.
By the way, I got some insider for you because we got to wrap things up. Luke Jones, he loves baseball. If his Ravens reports suck this week, it's because he's glued to some Yankees game or something here this week. But he'll be out knowing as much. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke. You can follow us both at Baltimore Positive. So I had a great guest on this week. You sent me an email, a guy named John Miller, not that John Miller, I got to find that tape of John Miller telling the Angelo stories and put that back together because I'm going to re-release the Peter Principles at some point here in the coming months when the Ravens sort of slow down a little bit. But guy sends you an email to get to me about the Earl Weaver interview I did, which was the last interview Earl ever did in his life. And Dick Gordon, who represented Louie, represented Earl. It's a long story. I was working on a book. It was 2000 and what year was the statues? 11, 12?
2012.
Okay. So Earl sat down with me for 22 minutes after saying he was going to give me 5 or 10, and he was enjoying himself. And I looked to see if there was more, if I had more of it, but I didn't because the conversation took, this guy took a liking to it because he's doing a book on Earl Weaver. So he's researching Earl Weaver and the story of Earl Weaver. He's like, the thing I had was this very rare candid end of his life conversation about failing as a player and how that led him to becoming a successful manager. But that was the conversation I was trying to have with him about leadership because that's what the book was about. So anyway, he loved it, came on the show with me, and he said to me, "Hey, dude, I got a copy of the original Oriole Way." And I'm like, I thought the Oriole Way was like an unwritten set of rules, kind of like the paper. But dude, I've got a PDF here, legitimately, single spaced. Here, I'll pull it up so you can get just a look at it, because I'm just going to give a little preview. But you know, giving signs, coach running, base running, you know, like double spaced. Like there was really an Oriole Way manual.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't say that I've seen what you just showed us, but yeah, that's known that it wasn't just lip service. Put it this way. That wasn't just a t-shirt slogan. You know, I mean, that's all it.
Well, I did the Cal Senior event last week too, right? So Cal Senior was the embodiment of that. So, hey, dude, we got to roll. You got to get to practice. I appreciate the baseball love this week. You made me get my Padres jersey out right in the middle of. So, you know, anytime you can wear the 19 makes me feel 19 again. You know, it feels like Steely Dan. He's Luke Jones. He's in Owings Mills. He's watching baseball. He's on the internet. He'll be at the Meadowlands. I'll be over here. It's Crab Cake Week. Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming to Fadley's on my birthday. It's Friday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Goodwill and Window Nation. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.